It's Thursday,
September
11, 2008, and it's 420 summer in the world. I'm your host, Radical Russ Belville. Produced and distributed by the National Organization for the Reform of Marijuana Laws in Washington, D.C., this is your normal daily audio stash, the growing truth about cannabis. Welcome to the most popular podcast regarding marijuana in all of America and all the world, featuring interviews with scientists, politicians, doctors, prohibition policy activists, regular cannabis consumers, musicians, and Normal's staff and Normal's board of directors, along with music and comedy no other podcast can offer. You can always find out more about our show at our website, stash.normal.org. And continue the education and conversation on our blog as well. We're ending marijuana prohibition with education, one listener at a time. The podcasting and blogging technology for the Normal Daily Audio Stash is provided by Red Aphid Interactive Media. For your professional web design needs, visit redaphid.com. Good afternoon, dear stashers, on this solemn day of September 11th, 2008, 7 years since the devastating attacks of September 11th on the World Trade Center and the Pentagon in Shanksville, Pennsylvania. Again, condolences and remembrances go out to all those who lost someone on that fateful day. It's been kind of a odd day for me in that I got up early this morning and saw MSNBC was rerunning their morning news coverage from September 11th. It's something I never got to see as I was prepared getting ready for work at that time and was working teaching computer software when September 11th actually happened. I'll never forget it. After we got on break for my class, I had heard that a plane had hit the World Trade Center, and I, of course, like many other people, thought it might have been a small prop plane, maybe an accident. During the break time, students from all the other classes gathered into a classroom and were watching a television news and finding out the true horror of what was happening. And all the rest of the classes in my building canceled their class for the rest of the day, except for mine. I was teaching a group of project managers, people pretty high up in the corporate food chain, and they decided that taking the day off because of this terrible tragedy was just not going to be very cost-effective for their corporate bottom line, since they'd flown in all these people from all around and had to put them up in hotels and such. So I had to go on and teach my class after watching the World Trade Centers come tumbling down. Building I just stood on the roof of some, 7 years earlier on one of my corporate IT jaunts around the country when I had actually worked a few blocks away from the World Trade Center, and a new guy from Idaho running around in Manhattan looking up to see those towers was the only way I knew how to get back to my hotel. Also, I'd like to remind everyone that since September 11th, we have had 3,396,180 people arrested for the simple possession of marijuana, and exactly zero people have died from marijuana since that time. And during that time, since September 11th, the man responsible for killing almost 3,000 U.S. civilians and terrorizing our country into shredding our civil liberties is still free. So think about that as far as our law enforcement priorities. All right, time for some happier topics. Today on The Stash, we're going to be interviewing Terry Joyce with the 420 Comedy segment. And Terry is bringing a very special guest to us, Lori Buckley, the daughter of Lord Buckley, the hipster comedian from back in the day. Really great conversation with Lori coming up later on in The Stash. Also, I spoke with Tom Dobert from Montana Patients and Families United. He brings us a tragic tale of Scott Day, a medical marijuana patient in Montana who is facing prosecution from the county prosecutor for his medical marijuana plants. Unfortunately, Scott did pass away, but the charges are still pending against his widow. We'll talk to Tom about that. All right, everybody, it is kind of a solemn occasion. And so remember that here at the Normal Daily Audio Stash, we're fighting for freedom. not just the freedom to use marijuana as we see fit, but freedom in general. And that's what we ought to think about today. It's time for your Normal Daily Audio Stash. Now it's time to take a look at the latest stories about marijuana from news organizations across America and around the world in our Normal Daily Audio Stash, Hemp Headlines. Whistleblower alleges John McCain used senatorial power to protect wife Cindy from the DEA. From the blog Open Left. You've probably heard about Cindy McCain stealing prescription drugs from her charity in the 1990s. Today, Tom Gosinski, her former employee and a close friend of the McCains, came out on the record about the entire sordid episode. Gosinski stayed quiet out of fear until today. A recent fight with cancer has strengthened his resolve. As he told me today, if he can beat cancer, he can go on the record regarding how the McCains do business. Gosinski was an employee of Cindy McCain who helped her run her charity, the American Voluntary Medical Team, or AVMT, in the early to mid-1990s. At the time Gosinski worked for her, Cindy McCain was addicted to prescription painkillers, taking between 30 to 50 pills a day of Vicodin and or Percocet. She had doctors writing out prescriptions in other people's names, including Gosinski. When Gosinski found one of the prescription slips, he got angry, and Cindy had him fired. Now it begins to get dangerous and vicious after Gosinski was fired. At first, the McCains said they'd help him find a job, but it became clear to Gosinski that McCain was using his political connections to blackball him from another job in Republican politics in Arizona. So he sued the McCains for wrongful termination and went to the Drug Enforcement Administration to find out the legal repercussions of having prescriptions for painkillers written in his name. To retaliate, McCain then had his political ally, Rick Romney, open an extortion investigation against Gosinski. In the course of that investigation, it was revealed that the DEA was circling around Cindy McCain and her charity. It's not clear what they were investigating her for, but it is clear she was bringing illegal prescription drugs around the world on a diplomatic passport secured for her by McCain's Senate office. McCain's Senate staff and Senate resources were intimately involved in Cindy's work with the charity. John McCain procured her a diplomatic passport, which meant that her bags were not searched by customs, and Mark Salter and Tory Clark were both coordinating with Gosinski on logistics for the trips abroad. The charity was supposed to conduct medical missions abroad, but Cindy was also stealing from the charity's supply of drugs for her own personal use. In August of 1994, the story was going to come out, and so John McCain came out with his side of the story. He claimed he didn't know that Cindy McCain was using drugs until 1994, a clear lie. Cindy McCain overdosed in 1991, and John McCain went to the hospital in Sedona and told the hospital staff not to make the information about Cindy public. Gosinski heard about the overdose in 1992, after he began work for Cindy McCain. There are lots of unanswered questions, but the basic contours of the story are clear. John McCain used his position as a senator to help his wife abuse illegal drugs and avoid being searched by customs. And somehow his wife managed to avoid any charges by the DEA or the state, which has mandatory minimums in cases like this, on drug charges despite ample evidence. Did the DEA or the state not file charges against her because of political pressure? Did they keep this on the federal level to avoid mandatory minimums for Cindy McCain because of political pressure from McCain? Did John McCain and or his Senate staff tamper with a criminal investigation of his wife and her conspiracy to fraudulently attain illegal drugs? Silly blogger. It's okay if you're a Republican. I've noticed that doctor shopping pill popper Rush Limbaugh still has a job and managed to avoid a sharp look from the DEA and a stiff mandatory minimum sentence. But if you're a liberal or counterculture like Tommy Chong, you don't even have to be caught with drugs to have the DEA publicly humiliate and imprison you. They'll spend months of time and millions of dollars to bust you for just selling the glass used by some to smoke marijuana. Stop for a second and imagine that Michelle Obama was popping 30 to 50 Vicodin and Percocet a day, obtaining them through forged prescriptions, stealing the drugs from a charity she runs, and it's alleged that Barack Obama was using his Senate privilege to get her a diplomatic passport to help her hide her drugs while traveling, pressure the hospital to remain quiet about her overdose, and curry favor with the DEA and others to avoid prosecution, then lying about the details of the scandal. Got that in your mind? Do you think, under that scenario, that the first time you'd be hearing this whistleblower story would be in the Daily Audio Stash? Do you think Barack Obama would have even won his state Senate race, much less U.S. Senate and the nomination for the Democratic Party for president? For more details on this story, including Kaczynski's personal journal, we've got a link to a 1994 article from the Phoenix New Times at our blog at stash.normal.org. NFL's Colts cut Ed Johnson after pot arrest, from the Indianapolis Star. Ed Johnson's latest off-the-field problem is one the Indianapolis Colts won't tolerate. The team said it would waive its starting defensive tackle today as a result of his arrest early Wednesday morning in Hamilton County on a charge of possession of marijuana. The Colts promised swift disciplinary action once they had completed their fact-finding mission and delivered. They are jettisoning a player who had started 18 games, including one in the postseason, after being signed as an undrafted rookie in May 2007. Johnson's latest troubles began at 12:08 Wednesday morning. A Hamilton County police officer stopped Johnson's 2009 Mercedes on westbound I-465 for going 72 miles per hour in a 55 zone. When he opened his car door to talk with the officer, quote, "the officer noticed the odor of marijuana coming from inside the vehicle," end quote, said Vicki Dunbar, a public information officer with the Hamilton County Sheriff's Department. A subsequent search of Johnson's car, first by a canine unit, revealed an undisclosed amount of marijuana in the vehicle's center console. Johnson, age 24, was given a citation for speeding and arrested on a charge of marijuana possession, a Class A misdemeanor. He was transported to the Hamilton County Jail, where he posted bond and was released. So the Colts suspend a star defensive tackle for cannabis use. Meanwhile, most of the rest of the team will be pumped full of opioid pharmaceuticals to dull pain in order for them to play the game. Pull a Brett Favre and you can cry painkiller addiction and be completely forgiven. But pull a Ricky Williams and use marijuana medicinally and you can kiss your NFL career goodbye. All this to send a moralistic message to the kiddies. Don't smoke pot. Now, please, kids, enjoy this Budweiser commercial with the scantily clad girls who swoon over beer drinkers. Now here's one for Cialis, so you can be pharmaceutically ready for that right moment. And another one for the latest mood stabilizer like Prozac. So sad, really, that the marijuana works better and is safer than the beer, Cialis, and Prozac at accomplishing the same results. Before you respond with, "but pot's illegal," let me just say that it is only illegal because of this sick moralizing about it. It's far less harmful than the booze and pills whose ad revenue the NFL laps up. No wonder when NBA and NFL and even sumo wrestling stars choose to relax with an intoxicant, they pick the safest one that doesn't affect their playing ability in the slightest. Before you respond with, "he's a role model, he shouldn't do any drugs," let me first ask you if you're reading this after smoking a cigarette or having a beer, and ask why you're so quick to throw stones from your glass house. They caught the tater. Comedian Ron White busted for marijuana. From WRCB Channel 3, Chattanooga. Comedian Ron White's run-ins with the law make up a big part of his act on the popular Blue Collar Comedy Tour. Now he's got some fresh material. White was arrested for marijuana possession and possession of drug paraphernalia in Vero Beach, Florida, on Wednesday. Police say an anonymous tipster informed them that a plane carrying a passenger in possession of illegal drugs would be arriving at the Vero Beach Airport at 5 p.m. Wednesday. White and the pilot were the only ones on board. Officers say White was carrying less than 3 grams of marijuana along with a pipe. He was arrested and later released after posting $1,000 bond. You're traveling alone with the pilot and an anonymous tipster knows you're carrying less than 3 grams of pot? That's less than 1/10 of an ounce, I've rolled joints bigger than 3 grams. Just how anonymous could this person be? He obviously wasn't popped by TSA at the airport before flying to Vero Beach. The anonymous tipster somehow seemed to know exactly which airport and where he'd be landing at what time. Somebody close to Ron White has it in for him, in my opinion. An ex-wife, perhaps? Medical marijuana patient takes plea deal in pot garden teen killing. From the San Jose Mercury News, Bellflower, California. A Bellflower homeowner who shot and killed a teenager, allegedly stealing his backyard marijuana plants, has pleaded no contest to involuntary manslaughter. Prosecutors say Jerry Roger Kress, who had been charged with murder, agreed to the plea deal calling for 15 years in prison. The 61-year-old resident shot Jacob Walker in January 2007 after allegedly discovering the 15-year-old Paramount High School freshman and his 25-year-old brother in the backyard where he was growing marijuana. Kress says he has liver cancer and he grew and smoked marijuana to ease treatment symptoms. A 15-year prison term for a 61-year-old man with liver cancer may as well be a life sentence. However, I can never justify taking someone's life over a marijuana plant. Patients, be smart with your grow security, keep plants hidden from public view, and never use violence to protect your crop. I believe 15 years is far too harsh a sentence, considering the man was protecting his personal property on his own land. He's a medical user of marijuana, protected by Prop 215, and the marijuana thieves were engaged in trespassing and robbery of drugs. It's not a medical plant to the 15-year-old. Once again, a situation where the prohibition of marijuana for all adults creates a system where marijuana is worth more per ounce than palladium, giving incentive to thieves to turn over a quick profit. I'm sorry a teenager was killed, but he, unlike Jerry Kress, was committing a felony on another man's property.
Hello, I'm Paul Stanford from the Hemp and Cannabis Foundation, or THCF. Medical marijuana is legal in 12 states today, and THCF has medical clinics in 6 of those states. Our physicians help qualified patients obtain an authorization for medical marijuana in their state. Patients are eligible for medical marijuana with a history of either severe chronic pain and or nausea, cancer, AIDS or HIV, hepatitis, glaucoma, seizure disorders like epilepsy, chronic muscle spasms as in multiple sclerosis or asthma, neurodegenerative diseases such as Alzheimer's, and gastrointestinal disorders like IBS or Crohn's disease. If you or someone you know has one of these conditions, our doctors will help them obtain a permit for medical marijuana. THCF Medical Clinics has offices in Washington State, Oregon, Colorado, Nevada, Hawaii, and California. Call 1-800-723-0188 or go to the web at www.hemp.org or 1-800-723-0188.
Weed.
That's Booty Valley, Booty Ha.
Weed.
Where any office boy or young mechanic.
Now it's time to take a look at 420 Comedy with the star of Hollyweed Live. You know her from the season one of Last Comic Standing on NBC. It's Terry Joyce. Terry, welcome back to the stash.
Well, thanks.
How's the week been treating you?
The week has been pretty good. I mean, I don't have any complaints. You know, everything's going well. I was just reading up on Sarah Palin.
Oh yes,
our vice president nominee for the Republican Party. You know, and in it, you know, she stated that you know, because the decriminalization laws for marijuana are more laxed in Alaska, and she mentions that she smoked marijuana. I guess in her junior college days, but didn't enjoy it. And, you know, that's just like so sad. That's just like saying that you just can't orgasm. You know? I just found that interesting. And I think I was thinking about how it's interesting how, why are we so concerned about who smoked marijuana all the time. It's just like, it just seems so, like, that's the bad mark, you know? It's like, Clinton, you know, I smoked it, but I didn't inhale. I mean, at least Sarah Palin smoked it and admits it that she inhales, but she didn't enjoy it. There's always this, you know, you're worse off if you ever done marijuana. You shouldn't be a policeman if you've smoked marijuana. I mean, I just think we should just give it up. I mean, let's change our minds about this. A lot of people smoke marijuana.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say. Is you're looking at Sarah Palin, a person in her 40s, and Barack Obama, a person in his 40s. They both admit to having used marijuana, and we're getting to the point now where there's not going to be anyone who can run for office who didn't at least try marijuana in their past. You know, based on, you know, being part of that baby boom and later generation. So, yeah, maybe it's going to start fading away as an issue. I could certainly hope so. Now, also, you've got, as we usually do here on our Thursday 420 comedy, you've got another comedy guest joining us. So let me give you an opportunity to introduce Lori.
Lori is she's very talented. She's very smart. And she comes from a lineage of speakers. Her father was Lord Buckley, and to my understanding, now Lori could probably explain it better than I can, but he was very progressive, and actually Lenny Bruce was looked up to Lord Buckley.
Hmm.
and around the era of Allen Ginsberg and Jack Kerouac and beat poets and during that era, and Laura is Lori Buckley is very funny, and we've been doing the free speech show for ComedyNation.com several times together, as well as we just worked on the anniversary show, and she also had a radio show out recently, and I just think she's an amazing, intelligent woman, and so she's my guest today.
Well, Lori Buckley, welcome to the Daily Audio Stash. How are you?
Thank you. I'm absolutely doing. I'm even better now than I ever was this morning. So thank you, Terry. That is so lovely. And I was just dying to jump in there because Lord Buckley was definitely an advocate of the great green vine. And when he tells the story of Jonah and the whale, he says that the reason Jonah was convinced to jump in the ocean and go after the Philistines was because the Lord had told him to dig on the great green vine.
Ah.
And that he had saved some in his watertight pocket. So when he got in the whale and he was freaked out, the Lord told him to chill and to remember the green vine and that courage would return.
Ah.
Lord Buckley got sold under the counter with Red Fox because he said the F word, but because he said the Naz instead of the Nazarene, but he loved that talking. And I think the beauty of marijuana, which... the reason things haven't changed is because nobody wants to say that we've been hosed down for the last 50 years. We were misled. We tortured people. We ruined people's lives. We treated and attempted to control Mexicans, which is ridiculous. And all this over because, the competition couldn't take the naturalness of weed. It's like what a natural product is to a pharmaceutical. A dangerous thing. Pharmaceutical people are afraid of nature, because they can't reproduce it.
Absolutely.
So I think we live with that struggle, but I think the more we talk about it, like you folks are doing, is fabulous. And have you seen Grass by Ron Mann?
Absolutely. We show that at our booth when we do all these hemp festivals and such across the states.
He's amazing. I thought this was the greatest gift for our generation because we have to pull down. We've been worshiping crap. We've been keeping people in prison. We've been absolutely out of our fakakta minds in this country. And the big wake-up call is quit torturing nice people.
Yeah, exactly.
And, it's just an amazing thing. And so I'm always, I believe in molecular divinity. And that way everybody's covered.
All right.
And that we will be like the 100th monkey and get it and drop this facade and get to the truth and to let people rock.
All right. Well, looking back on the history here, like Terry was mentioning, your father, Lord Buckley, and I'm just checking out the website here at lordbuckley.com, had quite a history, involved with the Beats and all these other, folks that were on the forefront of understanding cannabis. What would you tell your father, if you could, at this point about what's happening with the great green vine and what are your hopes for us finally coming to our senses in this country?
Well, Dad, Dad had it even rougher than we did because, you know, he had J. Edgar Hoover.
Mm, yeah.
He was a beast. You know, like they said, you know, how it secretly he dressed as a woman, but the comic said, you know, what made him think he looked better? You know, the guy was a freak and running this insanity. And Dad, they focused on him because, of course, he was doing these amazing monologues. He was talking, there was this, you know, white man speaking the language of the 20s, black musician, and speaking it well and lovingly and bringing this amazing interpretation. Well, he was on the hit list. So he was also being obsessed by some of these L.A. cops at the time because it was the du jour of the panic moment and the control freak. So I think he'd go out for a night. He would roll a doobie in his nutsack, okay? That's how much harassment he was ready for.
Wow.
But he dealt with the mobsters in the East Coast during the Al Capone years. He understood life, and he didn't hate people for it. He just wanted to hit people and let them make their own decisions. And so I think he'd be gloriously thrilled and knowing, as he was so wise and so cool, that this would come eventually, and it gets to be during our time.
Yeah.
And I think the veil's going to drop. And the more that I just love Ron Mann's movie. I was so touched. I've watched it a couple times now. And because he's revealing, he's putting that mirror up to the nation and going, have a look. You know, he's the Michael Moore of the cool stuff. And I'm so grateful for his information so that we can begin to develop the intelligent dialogue that goes for those non-believers that think they can't stand the thought they were screwed over and lied to and made to do things and ruined people's lives over a big lie.
Yeah.
And this is one of the biggest facing us, but the payoff is, hey, we forgive you.
That's right. You know, I've often been saying to people that it's all about the education here, that, you know, people have been living under the regime of prohibited marijuana for so long that most people don't even know why it's illegal. They just know that it is, and they kind of get in this circular argument of it's bad because it's illegal because it's bad because it's illegal because it's bad, or they never uncover what the real reasons are, the racism behind this,
and also the fact that cops smoke shit too, because you know, in Vegas they had a bars where only cops could go to unwind for the terrible shit they had to endure for the day, you know, and they were all heavy drinkers. But you know, cops got smart. They knew pot was better, and they always knew pot was okay. But when you make, like we've done with the drug policies of this country, when you talk so much crap and have made it be such a big financial institution of profit from the misery of others, when we drop our issue with all drugs, it should all be a health issue. I heard a former Supreme Court judge say on the Today Show, decriminalize all drugs today and tomorrow all the violence in the streets will stop. We have to be able to get a grip on this industry like the union for the people that employ in the prison guards. You know, they're so big, they start to move freedoms over and go after their own things. And we've run into a big industry of profit off of other people's misery. And that's the big elephant in the room next to the other elephants that need to move. And this is where our nut is to crack. But it's becoming so, what they say, nothing harder to say than the obvious. It's so frigging obvious.
Yeah.
And so it's, I continuously ooze change. I was up in New York at Montel Williams' show. I got to walk through the production for a week because his second wife was one of my good buddies. And they were showing me around the place, and they go, do you smoke? I said, not cigarettes. The whole room froze. No one could speak about it. And a whisper came behind my back as someone said, it's so nice to meet an honest person. So, you know, we have a great breakthrough. This is as good as going to the moon or landing on Mars. Let's get over ourselves. The big joke is on us. And the longer we perpetrate it, the stupider we look. And the other countries the world need to wise up to.
Yeah.
You know, stop getting down on the herb and get to your business.
Well, a lot of those countries are following our lead. You know, the United States in the 60s pretty much strong-armed, and like it said in the Ron Mann documentary, a lot of these countries were strong-armed by the United States into signing on to these UN drug control treaties. They'd much rather have a more sensible policy, but we're kind of forcing it on them.
Well, you know, they said the same thing about George Bush in Thailand when they wanted to stop doing, you know, the poppy and stop making the heroin, and they said, no, we're not interested in that, because it's one of the things the upper levels of power in the world trade like to go into the friggin' swap meet at our expense.
Yeah, absolutely.
And, you know, so we've got this big game going on, and so we have to reexamine the Bush family. We have to go back and look at the things that Ron brings up in the film about where, you know, the poison thinking started, and really examine, check ourselves as a nation for witch hunting.
Yeah.
You know, we were burning bitches in Salem, okay? And I think we're burning other people right now. It's just that we're not looking at it properly. You know, we need to peel the grape and realize that we've been inflicting pain and conscious negative behavior, false illusions like, you know, a war in Iraq. And we have been projecting this as because power gets to the top and can ultimately determine things that are against us.
Yeah.
It's what do people want? People do not want these laws. We want the laws to stop. All you smokers in Utah, don't get caught. Their laws really suck. They make everybody go the 12th hour. But, you know, it's we have to drop these things, and we have to stop letting these people make money off of a natural thing that's the kindest thing in the world to us to help us cope with what's going on. It grows. It's sweet. It elevates your thinking. You get the munchies. You love each other more. You know, BFD, folks, what's your problem?
Well, you know, you totally speak the truth here, and I'm sure your father would be very, very proud of you. Where can people hear more of this truth from you? And, again, we're speaking with Lori Buckley here. Are you appearing on stage or online anywhere where people can get some more truth from you?
Well, you know, I just started Facebook, but, you know, I'm on there as Lori Buckley. But, you know, I'm just learning how to utilize it because it just comes out naturally, as Terry knows. So, you know, we enjoy the beauty of the free speech show. And it's so great to be able to speak up. But this is more of a very passionate issue for me because there's so much going on that, you know, pot is all a reflection of the bastard version of our country's life that really, hopefully, can be a couple more natural disasters will get closer to the truth.
Maybe so.
You know, because that brings out, as Whoopi Goldberg so beautifully said on The View today, that 9/11 brought Republicans, Democrats, Filipinos, whites, Pintos, whatever. It brought everybody together, and we became Americans. We also became, you know, people with our ass in a sling. And this is the unity of consciousness that we have to raise the bar. Why? Because why not? We've mucked enough in fantasy and mysticism and lies and things that distract us from our real work of being decent to people.
Well put. And let's close things out here with Terry. Terry, just wanted to find out if there's any new shows that you're involved in, some new dates for people to be aware of on your tour or with the ComedyNation.com or anything like that.
I'm actually going to, you know, Lori and I just did a ComedyNation.com taping on Sunday, and that's already up right now. And also, we have our anniversary show, apparently. We did an anniversary, like, you know, Bill Bronner was on last week, and we talked about the anniversary show. That's going to be online very, very soon. And I'm also I'm going to tape another one this Sunday coming up, and I'm also going to be doing a video blog that you have to check out, and that's going to be up on ComedyNation.com, and I'm going to YouTube it as well. I have a couple shows here locally in town, you know, you know, later on this month. I mentioned them last time. They're like just, you know, they're in bars and stuff. And mainly, for the moment, I'm just, working on, internet shows as well as I'm going to go into production for a new movie starting in November.
Really?
So I'm going to be going into pre-production probably by next month.
Excellent.
So I'm very excited about that. So. Well, I don't really have, like, you know, a whole lot of, like, you know, stand-up shows that you could check out me out at the moment. But it will be very, very soon.
All right. Well, we'll keep everyone online and in touch with what's going on with both Terry and Lori Buckley here. And, ladies, thank you so much for joining me here on the Daily Audio Stash.
Thanks. It was wonderful. Thank you so much.
I smoke lots of weed, man. I plant that big old seed, man. I smoke every strain there is in town. From the super sticky green to the headache maxi brown, I smoke every strain there is around.
I know that I like it. I know that lots of people like it. So let's see what happens if you overdo it.
Do we have any pot smokers here today? Any at all?
My name is Doug Benson, and I'm about to get super high.
The term medical marijuana, you've basically, you drank the Kool-Aid, because there is no such thing as medical marijuana.
I'm going to smoke pot every day for 30 days and try to remember to film it.
And my movie's going to be called Super High Me.
Or Business as Usual. I haven't decided yet on the title.
I'm going to be hospitalized, I think. Some people call it dope. Some think it smells like burning rope. I tell you, it relieves my mind.
Here at the Normal Daily Audio Stash, we work hard to change our nation's marijuana laws through education and discussion. But we also take time to relax and unwind with an eclectic mix of pod-safe music from many independent artists. We look for music that speaks to the growing truth about cannabis, or music that speaks to broader themes of freedom, liberty, social justice, equality, and protest. To find out more about the artists and download the music you hear on this podcast, just log on to stash.normal.org. And if you'd like to get your music heard by the online cannabis community, just send us an email at stash@normal.org. Today on The Stash, we're serving up some trance reggae with Zion Train and their dubstyle track, Zion High. The album, Original Sounds of the Zion, was released in 2002. The material from that album was passed around to musical friends and peers to produce this 2004 remix version with Dubwise and Techno. Zion Train are dub dance pioneers, hitting the dub scene in the early 90s with their debut album, A Passage to Indica. The members are all single-monikered musicians in the UK, with Perch, Cod, and Trench doing the live dub mixing and production. Malara on vocals, Hake on trumpet, and Forkbeard on trombone. A peek at their website, wobblyweb.com, gives you insight into these prolific musicians and their amazing touring schedule. This weekend they're playing in France, and next weekend in England and Belgium. Hop on the Zion Train for a ride you can groove to. The album is The Original Sounds of the Zion Remixed. You can learn more about that at wobblyweb.com or through the links at our website, stash.normal.org, where we've also got an MP3 download of this song. It's Zion Train with the remix of Zion High.
Thank you. I'm Keith Straub, the founder of Normal. In all the years since 1970 that I've been fighting marijuana prohibition, I've learned that drug warriors love to confuse the public with statistics. Lately, they've claimed that there are more teens enrolled in drug treatment for marijuana than ever before. It's a statement that, while true, is intentionally misleading. What they don't tell you is that marijuana arrests have skyrocketed to over 800,000 arrests per year. They also don't tell you that we've gone from a few dozen drug courts in the 1990s to over 2,500 drug courts today. The kicker is that those drug courts sentence teens routinely to drug treatment for marijuana whether they need drug treatment or not. So they arrest more people for pot, require them to enter drug treatment, then claim the higher treatment numbers justify more pot arrests. It's an absurd proposition, but no more absurd than banning a plant. Learn the facts about pot. Visit norml.org today.
Here at the Normal Daily Audio Stash, we like to keep tabs on all the stories that are affecting the medical marijuana patients in the 12 medical marijuana states in the United States. A lot of those stories are going to come from the West Coast, but people shouldn't forget that we have medical marijuana in the great state of Montana. And joining me now to talk about a tragedy in that state regarding medical marijuana is Tom Dobert from Montana Patients and Families United. Their website is www.mtpfu.org, and we'll have links to that up on our blog at stash.normal.org. Tom, welcome back to the Daily Audio Stash.
Thanks for having me, Russ.
Well, you know, this story that we have to tell our listeners here is, sadly, it's not a rare story in the case of medical marijuana patients. We're talking about a man who just recently passed away named Scott Day, and how the prosecution of Scott Day helped to lead to his untimely demise. Maybe you can give our listeners a better picture of what's going on there in Montana.
I'd be glad to, Russ. As you suggest, it's a positively heartbreaking story, and it exemplifies the continued problems that patients suffer in spite of our law, stemming from law enforcement's tendency to ride roughshod over both the spirit and the nuances in our law, and to not care about those details in their thirst to prosecute whatever kind of marijuana case comes before them. Scott Day suffered from an extremely rare and truly horrific congenital condition called mucopolysaccharidosis. And to oversimplify, this condition deformed his body and delivered pretty much constant severe pain and muscle spasm problems, as well as nausea and a host of symptoms. Scott and his wife grew marijuana solely for their own personal medicinal use. Scott needed multiple strains of the plant, which he had developed over the years. He had a plant genetics, the mix of which were ideal in addressing his problems. But a drug task force learned about his garden and trespassed on his property without a warrant to get to the point of entering his home and later obtaining a warrant. And Scott and his wife were being prosecuted on multiple felony counts of possession, intent to sell, and you know, on down the list of the usual knee-jerk law enforcement responses. The awful thing about this prosecution was that Scott's medical condition required literally $40,000 every month worth of enzyme and other treatments just to survive. And those treatments didn't quell his pain and muscle spasms and nausea problems. All they did was keep him alive. He needed the marijuana to be comfortable and to have a quality of life. And to get right to the bottom line, those of us who knew him and worked with him could see that the prosecution was taking a huge toll on his stamina, his ability to breathe, and his overall well-being.
Now, he was a registered patient with the state of Montana, correct?
Well, he was not registered at the time of the law enforcement incident. He quickly became registered after that, the trial he was scheduled to endure hadn't even come up yet.
Now, doesn't... go ahead.
Add, his lifelong physician was well aware of his medical marijuana use and approved of it. But again, in a rather typical predicament many patients face, that physician was afraid to sign the recommendation because of drug war mythology and his misunderstanding of the law. He feared DEA reprisals. He feared vulnerability under the federal law. He didn't understand the Conant v. Walters court decision and how it protected him.
So at the time then, when law enforcement got involved with Scott Day and investigating his garden, he wasn't protected under the Montana law, or does the Montana law have some sort of mechanism for which, you know, if someone can demonstrate a good faith use of medicinal marijuana, that they could get off of the charges? I guess I'm having trouble understanding why the zealousness on the part of law enforcement to prosecute this case of someone who's so obviously suffering.
Well, we are completely perplexed and by that, as well as furious, frankly, because it's clear that under our law, Scott Day would have been found not guilty, and hence why bother with this travesty of justice and prosecution that taxpayers are forced to pay for. Our law does contain an affirmative defense clause that would have covered Scott's predicament and rendered him not guilty. The way our law works, Russ, is it allows but does not require patients to register with the state. Only registered patients enjoy the maximum legal protections and can't be arrested or prosecuted or punished in any way. But patients who aren't registered, while they may be vulnerable to arrest and the initial bringing of charges, you would think that prosecutors would be intelligent enough to look at the facts of the case, to learn about the kind of defense that is available to that person, and to then not bother to prosecute. Especially in a case like this, a person self-evidently very, very sick, unusually so, who was registered within days of the incident.
Now, also in the Montana law, do you guys have any sort of possession or plant limitations, and does the affirmative defense allow for a person to exceed those limitations, and where was Scott in all of that?
We do have limitations in the law, 6 plants and 1 ounce of usable medicine at a time per patient, and Scott, his garden did contain more than 6 plants. However, again, the affirmative defense clause is specific to that issue. And if a patient can demonstrate that what he or she was growing and what he or she possessed was what was needed in order to be reasonably sure of a steady supply to meet his medical needs, then the affirmative defense applies, and the defendant is not guilty. Mm-hmm. And that most certainly would have been the outcome in Scott's case. And actually, there are too many Montana patients are having difficulty with the 6-plant, 1-ounce limit. It's kind of like saying you're allowed to have 6 tomato plants, but never more than 1 tomato.
Yeah.
And I think any gardener understands if you need that tomato for vital medical purposes, and you need always to have a tomato, how are you going to do that? 6 plants, but never more than 1 tomato.
Yeah, I guess you have to have this special magical tomato plant that only produces 1 tomato at a time, I guess.
Well, it's even more difficult for patients who need to eat their cannabis rather than smoke or vaporize it, because, as you know, they need a larger amount to achieve the medicinal effects, and that was the situation for Scott.
Now,
he also needed multiple strains to really hone in on the diverse variety of conditions he suffered.
So where does this case stand now? Is the case still pending? I read something about his wife still being in some sort of danger.
Well, yes, the charges were being brought against both of them. And certainly the case will not proceed against Scott, since he's no longer with us. But charges have not been dropped against Summer Day, now a widow. But we are bringing as much pressure as we can, in a polite way, on the county attorney to do what's not only compassionate but also smart, and that's to drop the charges and save the taxpayers the dollars that this circus would absorb.
Well, let's see if our Stash listeners can help you apply some of that polite pressure. Can you give them any websites, phone numbers, addresses, anything they can use to help fight this fight for you?
I can, and all I need to do is fish it up. Say the easiest thing to do is to very politely email the county attorney. His name is Jed Fitch, F-I-T-C-H, and his email address is jfitch@beaverhead.mt.us. He's the county attorney for Beaverhead County in western Montana.
We'll have a link to that email address and information up on our blog at stash.normal.org so people can help out. And Tom Dobert is with Montana Patients and Families United with yet another sad story of a seriously ill or debilitated person who needs medical marijuana, and yet law enforcement wants to make their lives more miserable. We'll keep fighting this outrage. Thank you for downloading the Normal Daily Audio Stash, the growing truth about cannabis. We are produced by the National Organization for the Reform of Marijuana Laws in Washington, D.C. Our executive producer is Alan St. Pierre. Our deputy director is Paul Armentano. Our webmaster is Brian Judy. And web production is provided by Red Aphid Interactive Media. As always, you can catch up on the latest information about marijuana at www.normal.org. And you can interact and download from our Audio Stash blog at stash.normal.org. For everyone here at Normal, I'm your host, Radical Russ Belville, hoping all your harvests are bountiful and your encounters with law enforcement are non-existent. We leave you today with another one of our cannabis quotes, and in tribute to the father of our guest, Lori Buckley, I bring you a quote from Lord Buckley, who once said, quote, "Now look at here, all you cats and kittens out there whipping and wailing and jumping up and down and sucking up all that juice and patting each other on the back and hipping each other who the greatest cat in the world is. Mr. Malenkoff, Mr. Dallenkoff, Mr. Eisenhower, Mr. Woozin' Weezin', Mr. Wisen Woozin', Mr. Woodhill, Mr. Beechhill, and Mr. Churchill, and all them hills gonna get you straight. And if they can't get you straight, they know a cat that knows a cat that'll straighten you. But I'm going to put a cat on you that was the coolest, grooviest, sweetest, wailingest, strongest, swingingest cat that ever stomped on this jumping green sphere. And they call this here cat the Naz." End quote. That was the hip language of Lord Buckley as he tells the story of Jesus of Nazareth, or as he called him, the Naz. I'm Radical Russ. Thanks for joining us here on the podcast. We'll be back tomorrow with our interview with Steve Bloom, our celebrity stoner update. Until next time, take care of each other, tokers.